What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Van Chats. My name is John Kroom. If you haven't already, please make sure you hit that subscribe button. Leave us a review. It really helps out a lot. And a special thanks to all those people who have been out there buying our coffee mugs, our socks, our clothing, and just all the merch on johnkroomcycling.com. I really appreciated it. It really helps out a lot. And another special thanks to those people who have been coming up to me at the bike races that have recently popped back up and just telling me that you guys listen to the podcast. It's super cool to hear about all of you guys and what you guys think of the podcast. I couldn't do it without you guys, so thank you so much. But anyways, let's dive into this week's episode with Matt Musa. Matt Musa is a ex-pro cyclist. Now he runs a company called Moose Packs, which makes frame bags, dog leashes, dog collars, bike bags, all kinds of cool things for the bike. And yeah, we just kind of chat about how he got into that, where he fell in love with the sport, and we honestly just get to know a little bit more about Matt. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. But let's hear a quick message from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Spot. Spot is an accident insurance for active people. Guys, if you haven't already gotten Spot, you need to do it. I know everybody that listens to this podcast is active in some way or another. They're either skiing, cycling, running, hula hooping, any kind of crazy adventure. You need Spot because anything can happen when you're out there doing those crazy cool adventures, and Spot covers it. Spot gives you a zero deductible accident injury insurance that covers accidents up to $20,000 per injury. All you have to do is go to the link in the description below or go to kroom.getspot.com to get your quote today. It starts as little as $25 a month and you will be protected. And guys, I've already used it, so I know it works. So go check it out at kroom.getspot.com. That's kroom.getspot.com. This episode is also brought to you by chamois butter. Guys, if you haven't been using chamois cream, I really don't understand how you've been riding. Chamois butter makes products for everyone. So all you have to do is go to chamoisbutter.com, that's chamoisbutter.com, or just go to the link in the description below. My favorite is their Eurostyle, huge fan of the minty touch, but they have the lavender, they have the original, they have it all. They even have kit wash. So go to chamoisbutter.com, that's chamoisbutter.com, or just go to the link in the description below. This episode is also brought to you by Twisted Spoke Apothecary. Guys, this is that CBD I've been telling you all about here in Colorado Springs. It's ran by cyclists, so you got to check it out. Yeah, it's some of the best stuff I ever used, and I'm a huge fan of their peppermint tincture. It's what I use before I go to bed every night, and I have some of the best sleep, as well as their new CBD chamois cream. I've been testing that out, but they have it full gas, and honestly, it's some of the longest lasting chamois cream I've ever had. So you got to check them out. Go to twistedspokeapothecary.com. That's twistedspokeapothecary.com, or just go to the link in the description below. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Van Chats. I'm sitting here with Matt Musa of Moose Packs. This is one of those guys that actually saw me grow up through the sport. I probably bugged the shit out of him trying to go up through the ranks myself. And now he's kind of moved on, still into cycling, still loves cycling, but he's got a company that's doing pretty well called Moose Packs. So Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Good, so, good.
Good. Wednesday morning here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we base the company out of.
Yeah. Right on. Well, so
you mentioned coffee.
Yeah.
I'm drinking water.
Yeah. Drinking water right now. Yeah. Cool, man. So what tell me a little bit about your background and like how you got into cycling and where that all started. Cause I remember when I met you in Charlotte, like you were the legend of sure. I know you don't like it being told, but because you moved up through the sport pretty quick, right? Like you're like cat five one day, cat two, and then the next thing you know, you're on stands, no tubes, and part of some of the biggest USA crits teams on the East Coast.
Yeah. Well, I will say that from a young age, I was always mountain biking, doing a lot of, competitive cycling, kind of like in, late middle school, like early high school, really getting into mountain biking. I actually didn't start road cycling until I was about to like 18 or 19. But at the time I was racing a lot of the kind of regional professional level mountain bike races.
Yeah.
Kind of the, you know, pro one, your endurance mountain bike cross country races. So I was competing with a lot of guys who did race at that some higher levels. So coming into road cycling, I think it just worked out well that I was, you know, kind of already racing at a different tier.
For sure.
So I got to move through a little quicker. It was still difficult. I mean, even one of the things I didn't really learn until I was a Cat 3 was tactics.
Yeah.
And at least learning how to ride in a group. I remember the first few Cat 5 races I did, I just kind of rode off.
And, yeah, you were kind of known for that. I think that's what created your legendary status, I guess, and at least in those early ranks for those old dudes to be really stoked on you, was the fact that you would just ride away, lap the field, and then the race was pretty much done at that point, or you'd ride through the field and do it again.
Yeah. Well, I wish I could do that at the Cat 1 stage.
Yeah. A lot faster. For sure, man.
But yeah.
So what transpired, I guess, more or less, like, from there, what I guess pushed the drive for you to kind of keep going? Like, did you have any like pro ambitions or anything like that?
I think a lot of cyclists really want to be at the top level.
For sure.
So they're just going to keep working as hard as they can. And for me, it was, I would see guys racing at Novon Healthcare when I was 15, didn't even ride a road bike or have one. I was like, man, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be in that race.
Yeah.
And
for you guys that don't know what Novon is, it's the old Charlotte Pro Crit.
Yeah. Fortunately, I got to race it twice until it no longer happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just really became involved, really motivated. It's just fun. It's part of my everyday life.
Yeah.
I enjoyed riding bikes in general. You know, I don't have to be racing. I just love being on the bike. So I think that was one thing that kind of kept me going. You get to travel a lot. I got to see the whole United States, a bunch of Canada that I never would have seen or never, even have the opportunity to go out there. And, so it's a great experience.
For sure. I think
in general, for anyone racing at any level, traveling to a race is, just a good overall experience.
For sure. Yeah. And so, like I said before, I mean, you've raced for many USA Crits teams and some that I actually looked up to. I mean, like that I was pretty envious of. I mean, even as a Cat 4, I was just like, I was sending, it was funny, man. Like I was that guy who would send a resume as a Cat 4 to a team and just like, I quote unquote resume, in hopes that they would just be like, oh yeah, you know what? We'll definitely support you because you have the experience, and that's definitely the direction our team's going. But what was one of your favorite teams that you rode for and why?
I like Stantino 2s because they would send us to like every race. They had a big budget. So we got sent to like 60, 70 races. I mean, it was every USA Crit race. Anything local we went to, and then a few, we didn't do NRC stuff. It was mostly just crits. But any like one day kind of road race, NRC road race, we would jump into. I really like Stantino Tubes. But then I'd say, Palmetto with, Ben. He started that team. That was probably the most fun because it didn't feel like a job, and we still got to go to all the same races, and we didn't have to worry about like, you know, you have to get a result
for
all the sponsors.
Stress free.
So I think, that was the most enjoyable of, traveling. Yeah, I mean, you know.
No, I get it, man. And so, like, I guess my next question is let's dive into a little bit of your business, man. I mean,
I remember hearing that you were going to do this. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I don't think he understands how hard that's going to be. Like, and then I saw the first bag come out, or like one of the first bags. And I don't know if you had it or Ben had it, because I think you were making bags and just giving them to friends and just, and showing them off. And I remember seeing them and I was like, the name's cool. Like, the bag's actually cool. And then you went to school for it, right? Like, you went to Appalachian State for, was it design or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I went to App State, for a few years for apparel design.
Yeah. And like, I remember chatting with you and you were like talking to companies like Mountain Khakis, like internships and all this kind of stuff. And you've kind of brought it to fruition. So tell us a little bit about how that started, why you wanted to do that. I mean, you know, like, you literally went from bike riding to be like, dude, I'm going to make some cool custom bags for the bike. And I think this was at a time when bags, like, we're talking about it now because like frame bags are huge and bike roll bags and those things are big. But back then, like, if you had something, if you had something like a floppy handlebar bag, nobody wanted that.
Exactly. People thought that was crazy. They said, yeah, it's old school. No one wants that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And so where did that even come from?
Well, it literally actually came from the flip of a coin. Racing career was like kind of coming to an end and I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to go to college.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there with my mom and she's like, well, where do you want to go? I was like, I think I want to go to App State. It's in the mountains. I love the mountains. She's like, well, what do you want to do there? I was like, I don't know. She's like, well, just, you know, highlight two. We print out a whole page of like every major they had. And, you know, right off the bat, I could pretty much narrow it down to like, you know, only two that I could probably physically pass with like, you know, just bare minimum C's. So like anything, science, history, you forget it. But it was going to be like an art history or was actually thinking about like their ranger program for like a national forest ranger.
Yeah.
And I was kind of looking at both and then I spotted, you know, apparel design. And she's like, well, just flip a coin, see which one it lands on, and then just pick that one. I was like, okay. So that's how it started. And so I literally go to school because mom was like, yeah, just flip a coin. She's like, that's what I did.
Man, but isn't that the greatest thing you ever did? Because like, think about if you were an art history major right now, like, you'd probably be teaching, right?
I'd probably be somewhere on the same lines of Picasso.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. And so it's interesting how kind of life develops in its own weird way. So like, anyways, like take us through how it's kind of developed. I mean, you went from making bags and giving them to friends, and now you sponsor one of the biggest gravel racers, Ted King and Laura King, in probably in the country, if not the world. I mean, I don't know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean,
yeah, so I mean, they're
pretty
big.
Amazing. Yeah. So, I mean, quick step through college. Basically, we would have workshops. And everyone in there would, you know, mainly be doing apparel. And I decided, well, I'm more interested in outdoor gear, a lot of different types of gear, backpacks, duffel bags and whatnot. And so I figured, well, I'm just going to start making bags. They had a handful of industrial machines. I started ordering, you know, thicker, tougher fabrics online and just making these products, looking at other products and just trying to figure out, like, hey, how does this piece together? Creating patterns and some digitally, some by hand. And it just evolved from there. Yeah, I mean, I made a backpack and Ben was like, hey, that thing's pretty cool. And I was like, well, here, just have it. I was like, I'll make another one. I know I will. So that, like you said, just people were just like, hey, can I get a bag? And I started handing all these bags out and I was like, man, I started at least making my money back.
Yeah. Were you having to buy the material in college? Like, if you were making anything outside of, or was it even like projects and everything?
Yeah, I had to supply myself with all the material. The university would supply you with like tools and machines, but any material that you wanted, you had to purchase. So then I just started, It was pricey for sure. Yeah. I started basically just saying, well, you cover the cost of goods and I'll make you something. And then it slowly formed into, well, I'm going to start this image with this and I'm going to call it Moose Packs because my last name is Musa and I'm making packs.
Yeah,
that's real, awesome. Real original.
Yeah, the thought for, well, it kind of works out perfect. I mean, if I started calling something Moose Packs, it probably wouldn't work for me as well. I mean, even if it's not original, it works out, you know?
And then I bought the website, so I kind of own the domain. I purchased some rights to the logo and just pretty much sat on it for a few years. Graduated college, started working freelance with a designer out of New York. Did that for about a year and then ended up working for VF Corporation. They're out of Colorado now.
I'm not going to lie for a second. Like when you said you were working for a designer in New York, I pictured the movies of you just like running through this big glass room with like coffees and you're just like fumbling everywhere and you're working for some like
Project Runway
designer. Yeah. And it's like, get out.
How it was just, over Skype.
Yeah. So VF in Colorado.
And then worked for them for a few years. And then Catherine and I got married this last year. So it was supposed to be a pretty good wedding, but the pandemic happened. So at the same time, I said, I think I'm going to quit my job and start Moose Packs full time.
Yeah.
I said, okay.
And so were you working for VF at the time or?
I was.
Yeah. Okay.
I worked for them for about, I'd say Moose Packs and VF overlapped about 3 to 4 months. But then I just eventually left to start the company. And so far it's been really good.
That's awesome.
I've had a lot of ups and downs. Yeah. It's a lot tougher, like you said, starting your own company. I mean, it's
for sure.
I thought, well, I'll make bags. It's popular. You know, it'll go well. And it's hard. All the other things that go into the business that I did not know about running a business.
Sales tax, licensing.
Exactly.
Kind of stuff. Yeah, it's nuts.
Everything that just kind of started up was a big learning curve. I'm just happy to be doing it. You know,
it's awesome. So are you guys like, do you still make all the bags by hand or like, do you guys have factory or how does that work?
So last year, big shout out to Ted King.
Yeah.
He, you know, Ben Wolf, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I know of him.
Shout out to Ben Wolf as well. He's one of our, product ambassadors. He said, hey, I've got a buddy who's doing this, you know, kind of DIY gravel and he wants some bike bags. So I'm going to send him your way. I said, okay, cool. He said, yeah, it's Ted King. And I was kind of,
just his buddy, just this guy. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Bro. I was like, oh man, that totally rings a bell. Where do I know him from? I don't know his name. And so I just kind of looked him up. I was like, oh yeah, Ted King. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
World tour rider. So I said, yeah, send him my way. And I mean, he couldn't have just been like just the nicest guy. Just like,
yeah,
sent me pictures of his bike, did a FaceTime just to kind of confirm like some designs and just great, down to earth, good guy.
Yeah.
And he posted a picture of my bags.
Yeah.
And it just went big. And at the time, I didn't really expect like something like that was going to happen. I said, all right, I'm going to, over the next 4 months, build inventory, launch it in October of 2020.
Oh, and so you haven't fully left your job yet.
No, and the website wasn't even working. No one could even purchase product.
It was, man.
For me, I was like, all right, I have to take all my time to build the back end of this.
Yeah.
And I need to have some strategic marketing set up. I need to have, you know, branding. I need to go out and get photography and video, build this website, build the product, at least have one or two products available, order enough materials to make all this stuff. And before I could even do that, it was like SWAT team, FBI, all the armed forces just kicked my door down. And I'm like, whoa, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah. So were you just having people write in, or what was the deal?
So I started having people contact me on Instagram, and it was really overwhelming. So I was like, okay, I've got to get email set up. Yeah. So I've info@moosepack.com.
There you go.
Set up. Email. Website still not set up.
So, right on.
I just created basically a form for people just to kind of choose a handful of colors. I said, hey, here's kind of the design. Had some pricing set up and just let it go from there. And I probably had, I don't know, 300 to 400 orders within a month. And half of those I couldn't fulfill. And I think it was just because the time frame that I was setting was so far out that people were like, well, you know, I need something in the next coming weeks. So,
yeah,
which is okay. You know, I mean, I literally was like just starting.
So it was form orders. Like at this point, you haven't taken anybody's money yet.
Not at all. Yeah. That's I basically took money as soon as
it was done.
As soon as the product would ship, which was a little risky because I invested a lot knowing that I was going to make it back. It worked out. So very fortunate for that.
You essentially got like a Kickstarter loan to start your business in a weird way. I mean, I'm not saying that you didn't put any money into it, but it's like a lot of people, like the product, like buying the product's the hardest part.
Yeah. It's a really good way to look at it. I basically just had so many pre-orders. It was like a Kickstarter.
Wow.
And then from there, I was like, well, I can't keep up with this demand. I'm going to have to outsource, but I can't go overseas just because that's not what I want to do with the brand. I want to keep it US made. I source as much materials as I can, and everything from the US, or at least if it's coming from overseas, I'm purchasing it from a US distributor. So always giving US companies the business. So I started reaching out to like everyone I have in the apparel industry or outdoor industry contacts, like, you know, any cut and sew shops, like any small factories out there that can make me like 100 bags or something. I finally found someone out in Seattle that was like, yeah, send me your tech pack, your pattern, all your materials. We'll knock you out 150 bags. So they were, the main problem is no one will make you product unless you're ordering very large numbers, 500, 1,000, sometimes even 10,000 units at a minimum. Yeah,
for sure. I work for a bag company. They source out of, I want to say Saudi Arabia, maybe. I don't know. But they had to order like, I think it was like 50,000 bags or something. The bags that they were making, it was insane.
Yeah. I mean, you have to. And one of the reasons for that is just it's not worth the factory to kind of rearrange their whole facility for, 5 days worth of work.
Yeah.
If you're doing like 100 bags or something, or a week or two, they want to have it set up for a whole month. Mm-hmm. So I was fortunate enough for that to just get some help. And we're slowly kind of building like a good relationship so that I can hopefully use them in the future. If I want to get some more like bulk inventory in, which I believe I'll need here in the next coming months. But I'm also looking at locally as well. There's the North Carolina is a big textile industry.
Yeah.
20, 30 years ago. And there's still a ton of factories out there that can help. So I'm looking to kind of bring it and keep it a little more local within driving distance, just so I can kind of go in there and like have a really good feel for what's going on.
Yeah.
But I'd say since last year, I've probably made 600 bags myself.
Wow.
I still make them all pretty much.
That's insane.
Other than getting outsourcing a little bit of inventory last year just to kind of help me roll through the year.
Are they pretty similar? Like, I mean, like you make them and then the outsource, like, could you tell a difference?
No, you can't tell the difference because the way that I make it, I build the spec to be like this. So it has like everything has to line up. And I mean, I've got it down to like, you know, 16th of an inch where things are placed. So, I mean,
that's insane. Yeah. Like just to think of like how quick that kind of happened. And I mean, I guess it didn't really happen too quick. Cause I mean, man, when I heard you doing this, I think Charlotte was still around maybe, or it had just been like the first year. It wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing these bags and I even remember reaching out and you just being like, yeah, man, like you just pay for the fabric and I'll do it. And cause I thought they were pretty cool too. And I don't even really remember whatever came of that, but, I probably just didn't follow up with it really. So that's awesome, man. So if you guys haven't already, please, you know, link in the description below, check out Moose Packs and get yourself a bag. And so can people order them custom, like certain measurements? Cause I think like with Apidura, like you actually have to measure they give you a printed sheet of paper and you wrap it around the bike. And that's like, it shows you the fit. It's the weirdest thing. Like I remember, cause I worked with Apidura on a project and I had to print out like 6 pieces of paper and line them all up, tape it, and then wrap it around the bike. So can like somebody actually send you measurements and get their own custom bag made?
Yeah. So for frame bags, I do have a program set up where you can go on the website, you click frame bag under the custom shop, and there's a few measurements that you have to send in. I haven't dipped into that full frame bag.
Yeah.
Your big bike packing adventures yet. Those are a little more difficult. So I've slowly been working into the frame bags as far as I do all the patterns by hand. So I don't have like a big industrial printer and yet.
Yeah.
And I don't have the CAD design to build these out and print them out and at least maybe send that in some sort of PDF to the customer. But I'm working with half frame bags, which I think a lot of people like. It's good for weekend trips.
About like the full top tube, just halfway?
Yeah, like this.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. So it connects to the C tube and the head tube and then
top tube. It's got big opening. It's got some pockets in there.
Yeah. See, I've never seen them with pockets in there.
Big zipper pocket.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yesterday, Catherine and I rode our bikes over to Total Wine and put a wine bottle in there. Right on. A piece of beer on the front rack. So it holds all the essentials.
It sounds just like it. And so now, like, you know, I guess at the end of the day, your goal, right, is to blow this, have your own facility, right? I mean, and so what are some of the riders besides Ted King and Ben Wolf? Who are some of the other riders that you support? Do you support anybody else?
Yeah, we support a few riders out of California and one more rider out of Pennsylvania. That's going to be Chris Meacham.
Okay.
And then we also support Sam, who rides for Legion.
Sweet.
And we support his partner, Jess.
We've had her on the podcast.
Yep. And then we also support Libby. She goes by Lib Dog.
Sweet. Lib Dog. All right.
And cool, yeah, they're they're just great people to work with. Good to have a lot of people riding the bags that can, I can kind of lean towards to give me really good feedback. I talk to them on a regular basis about the new product that I'm coming out with, different features. So it's kind of good to have a team to.
Well, I was about to say, yeah, I feel like the people that you have lined up are like some of the biggest adventurers in the US. Like, I mean, Jess, even though Sam's riding on a crit team / UCI Continental team, like that dude goes out on some wild rides.
Yeah.
Last best ride. Are you going to end up being there this year, or are you passing out on that one?
It's going to have to be a 2022 adventure. We're going to Rooted, and then Catherine and I never got to take a honeymoon. So we're going to spend the next 2 weeks exploring Maine.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Or else we would be out there.
And I think you're a little bit okay on the not taking the honeymoon thing. I got married on August 12th, 2017.
Nice.
On August 15th of 2017, I was at a Pan Am Championships camp. and it took us a year and a half for us to ever go on a honeymoon. And it was for me being told that I wasn't going to a World Cup. So it was kind of like, yeah, well, might as well go now and have fun and enjoy it. make the best of it and enjoy it. But I don't want to keep you all morning. I know you got things to do. I prepped you with this question. I know you don't drink coffee, but
probably the only cyclist in the world that doesn't drink coffee.
It's not true. We've had somebody else. Jesse Anthony can't drink coffee anymore. I think he has like some, like, you know, these cyclists find out about their like heart things so late on. But there's a few cyclists that have been on the podcast that can't do coffee, just won't do it. One wouldn't do beer either. So it was just tea. But I know you're a beer guy. If you could have beer with one individual, dead or alive, who would that individual be? Why? And what beer? This is an important thing. I mean, I don't think people take enough thought into this. Because usually when we ask the question, it's like, how would you take your coffee? You know, I think that's important.
Now you got me on pins and needles. Yeah. I might have to rethink my, I was thinking about this last night. I was like, you know, I would love to meet Stevie Ray Vaughan, blues guitarist.
That'd be cool.
I mean, you know, he, a pioneer, right?
Yeah.
In the music industry. But now I don't know if he would drink the beer that I like. So
I don't think he necessarily has to drink your beer, but I definitely think a beer is a mood situation, right? Like if you drink a Coors Light, and I'm not saying that you would, versus a,
you might.
Yeah. Depending on who you're with. And that's the thing. It's the mood, right? Or a porter versus an IPA versus a stout. There's so many options, man.
I think I would lean towards my go-to of a Guinness.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right on. Guinness stout. Have you ever had a Guinness in like Ireland?
No, I'm sure it's 100 times better.
Oh man, I can't do Guinness, but when I went there, I could somehow handle it. Like I could drink it. It was different. And I don't
know. I'm sure
I feel really pretentious saying that, but.
No, I mean, I've heard that the beer that some companies send to America isn't quite the same batch as they have. For instance, like a Stella, you drink a beer, it might be considered a generic beer, but over in Europe, it might be, it's something that's a kind of a go-to when it might taste better.
Sweet. So Stevie Ray Vaughan and a Guinness.
I think I'll stick with that.
It's a good answer. It's a good answer.
I'll let the comments roll on that for a while.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. And so you're racing this weekend at Southeast Gravel, right? You still race?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, participating. Hey,
we literally rode in a break for 40 minutes of it and had Ted King break. It was a break. I thought it was it's a pretty legit field.
Like, do you want to know a little like backstory on what was happening behind you? Cause you were off the front like the entire time.
I have no idea what was happening behind me. I just know that I can only ride hard on the road sections, and I was really lucky that half of it was road. And so I rode off the front because I had to keep a power. And that was my only thought process.
Oh yeah, I saw your power. I don't have a power meter. I sold it.
Yeah. Dude, if you don't race, like, get rid of that stuff. Like I wish I didn't have a power meter. But I have like 10 people looking at it.
I was like, man, John Kroom is pushing some serious numbers.
Well, I'm also a unit, mate. I'm not a small guy.
What basically happened was you were gone for a long time. And I knew that, you know, that like stair stepper gravel climb right after the river crossing.
Yeah.
I was like, that is going to be bananas, and there's no way I can hang up that climb. So I'm just going to sneak away and get there first. And that's kind of the tactic. That's the only thing I have. I was like, if it doesn't work, then I'm donezo. But I kind of just played it right. Ended up kind of just pulling that totally nonchalant, like, you know, looks like you're riding easy off the front until you crest over the hill, and then you're like full super tuck, just going as hard as you can. And that, I think that was the only way I got to kind of hang with the lead group to the finish.
I think that was the same for me, but like inadvertently, like, cause I got dropped on that stair stepper with the three other of you guys. So I was sitting in the lull. I was in between you guys who were up front, and then like Ted reabsorbed me, and then I just sat on with them for like a couple minutes so I could recollect myself, and then I felt okay again. And so
we'll see how this weekend goes. I think there's like some single track in there, so that should be fun.
Is any big hitters coming?
I don't know, to be honest.
I'll just find out. Probably George Hincapie again. Bobby.
Bobby, he's fast.
Dude, he's cooking. Yeah, I'm going to try to get him on the podcast too. So, but yeah, man, guys, thanks again so much for listening. If you haven't already, please make sure you go check out Moose Packs, and all the links are down in the description below. Matt, thanks again, dude.
Yes, you're welcome.
And we'll see you guys next time.